Radio, in the public interest, now presents Election Forum. The News and Special Events Department of CIHA Radio, together with Broadcast News and the Worldwide News Network of CIHA Fact Finder News, now presents Election Forum 1965. CIHA Radio will provide a complete and comprehensive analysis of the local and national election picture. Your commentators on tonight's program are Bob Carr and Tom White.
At 8 o'clock, we go to the Welland High and Vocational School for an election forum. Included in the affair will be all three local candidates in Welland riding for the forthcoming November 8th election. For the next 50 minutes, however, we shall concentrate on the overall situation and how it looks at this time.
Now, of course, on November the 8th, we hope that you will cast your vote. And to cast an informed vote, we hope you'll be able to attend the public forum at the Welland High and Vocational School tonight at 8 o'clock sharp. It's presented in the public interest by Local 523 of the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers Union. You'll have an opportunity to question the candidates and learn all of the facts. For a look at the local scene and some of the candidates, here's Hal Schultz.
Currently, in Welland riding, we have two lawyers and a minister vying for the seat that is left vacant by the loss of Dr. W.H. McMillan to the Liberal camp. Although McMillan has been campaigning with the newcomer, Don Tommy, for the Liberal camp, he remains staunchly determined to vacate the position he's maintained these past years. Born in Lindsay, Ontario, where he attended high school, Don Tommy has practiced law in Welland for the past 15 years. Tommy served 3 years in World War II with the RCAF air crew and was awarded the operational wing of the RCAF in recognition of gallant service in completing a tour of flying operations. Following the war, Tommy attended the University of Toronto, where he graduated in honor modern history, winning 3 scholarships. In 1951, he was an honor graduate from Osgoode Hall Law School. In 1951, he commenced legal practice in Welland and formed the partnership of Nash and Tommy. In 1964, he was appointed a Queen's Counsel. On City Council, Tommy served as an alderman for 8 years, from 1957 to 1964. And during this period, he served as chairman of finance and on all major committees. He has served as a member of the Welland Area Planning Board, the Welland Arena Board, and the Welland County Hospital Board. As a member of the hospital board, he served on the finance committee and the building committee during the construction of the new Welland County Hospital. Tommy is married to the former Shirley Cornwell of Grimsby, Ontario. They have 3 children, Danny, 11, Lorna, 9, and Douglas, 8. He is also a member of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church.
All three of the candidates have been busy, of course, during this campaign. Dave Crichton, however, managed to get a look at the conservative camp for this report on Ted Spencer.
54-year-old Ted Spencer graduated from Osgoode Hall in 1936, following his honors law course at the University of Toronto. A King's Counsel since 1951, he practiced law for 5 years in Delhi, Ontario, before coming to Welland. He has been in Welland since 1941 with his 3 sons and a daughter and his wife, Muriel. In that time, Spencer has been busy in many and diverse activities. With 3 boys, it's only natural that he should stress his interest in youth across this nation during the campaign which is now underway. Actually, he's worked indirectly with youth in both education and sports. Spencer has been on the Board of Education for 14 years, a post he still holds. He has been a director of the Welland YMYWCA and a manager, coach, treasurer for the city's Minor Hockey League Association. He's been active also with adults. A president of the Welland Little Theater. He's been vice president of the Welland Chamber of Commerce and president of the Men's City A Bowling League.
These are the 2 candidates who represent the larger parties, the Liberals and the Conservatives. Of course, the New Democrats haven't been slow in this campaign, and although we haven't had a Social Credit or a Communist candidate entered, the NDP candidate has more than made up for it with enthusiasm. Here's Jay Jackson with a look at the story on Reverend Robert Wright.
Reverend Wright, born in 1932 at Calibert, Saskatchewan, was the son of original settlers in that area. He came to the city in 1959 as a United Church minister, assuming duties at the All People's Industrial Parish. Married with 3 youngsters, he graduated from the University of Alberta before starting both his political and church careers. His political activities go back to a CCS University group, which led him to the post of assistant provincial organizer for the Alberta CCF at Edmonton in 1954. At that time, he was also national vice president of the CCF youth movement, a post he held until 1955. His interest in industry and welfare goes back some 10 years. He worked in Toronto within Metro Industry in 1955 after leaving Edmonton. Before coming to Welland, he was a field worker in New York's East Harlem for 3 years. Since arriving here, he has served on several boards of conciliation and reconciliation. That is not the full extent of his involvement in the city, though. Reverend Wright was the founder of the All People's Community Forum, serving as an executive member of the Canadian Council of Christians and Jews. A member of the Welland Public Library Board of Governors, he is also on the executive of Community Concerts and the Credit Union.
And then, Ted Spencer for the Conservatives, Don Tawney for the Liberals, and Reverend Robert Wright for the NDP will be with us tonight in a forum, an election forum at Welland High and Vocational School. It gets underway at 8 o'clock. We hope you can be there. Presented in the public interest by Local 523 of the United Electrical and Radio Machine Workers. Nearby in Niagara riding, there are five candidates this year. Of course, Judy LaMarche, the incumbent Liberal candidate, is back in there swinging for the Health and Welfare Department. Her Conservative opponent is Gene Douglas. An independent Conservative has been added as spice to the pot, John Graskamp. Ron Seaback represents the NDP. For full details, here's Tony Friedo.
This is a record field for the riding as one of four in Ontario with that many contestants. The last man to get into the race, and the person least known in the riding, is the social credit candidate, Arthur David Brooker. A 27-year-old businessman, Mr. Brooker operates a printing business in Port Hope, where he lives, and a bookbindery in Toronto. The SoCreds decided at the last minute to run someone here, and there wasn't time to hold a nominating convention. Mr. Brooker was available, since he had lost in a bid for the social credit nomination in his own riding. This is the second time since the riding was formed in 1953 that social credit has had a candidate here. In 1962, social creditor Vito Antonio ran a poor fourth with about 1,000 votes. Mr. Brooker, unlike Mr. Antonio, hasn't the advantage of knowing many people in the riding, but social credit supporters claim there are a lot of people who don't want to vote for the other parties and are looking for a new way to turn. Mr. Brooker is married with three children. He is active in the Christian and Missionary Alliance Church in Cobourg and the Christian Businessmen's Association in Port Hope. The odds against him winning are fantastically high, but the Social Credit Party apparently is building for the future. This is Tony Friedo of the Niagara Falls Evening Review with a special election report for CHOW News.
Now it's over to Brant Haldeman riding, where, of course, many of our Dunville and Cayuga friends will be interested in the election results. They'll be brought to you on CHOW Radio first, Radio 1470. For the Brant Haldeman picture, here's Bud Riley.
There are three candidates in the Brant Haldeman riding, with no SoCreds and no creditees. Represented are the NDP, Liberals, and Conservatives. Incumbent Larry Pennell of the Liberals has a lot at stake in this election. As current Solicitor General, he's a young man whose riding will be wiped out if the current plans for redistribution are carried through. Therefore, this may be his last election under the title Brant Haldeman. How the voting will go is still anyone's guess, but the Conservatives still have a strong candidate in Joseph Bradbury. A Paris schoolteacher, Derek Blackburn, is still running for the NDP. Our neighbors to the north in Lincoln riding have a choice of four candidates in this federal election, with the Liberals attempting to retain the seat they held in the last parliament. James McNulty, a well-known sports figure in the St. Catharines area, is seeking re-election. He won the seat for the Liberals in the last general election in 1963 with a majority of only 4,557. The other three candidates are for the Progressive Conservative, Joe Reed, carrying the colors of the New Democratic Party, is Arthur Peltoma,
And the banner of the Social Credit Party is being borne by George S. Mallory. Mrs. E. Reimer, the returning officer in Lincoln Riding, has her offices located in St. Catharines, the hub of this riding, and she looks for a hectic night on November the 8th. See How Radio will be following the results of Lincoln Riding very closely, as the results here will have a great deal of bearing on our own riding of Welland.
It's all well and good to talk about the local situation. It is, after all, the one foremost to many of us in the area. After all, we do have two Liberal cabinet ministers in the district. Judy LaMarche in Niagara Riding comes from the Department of Health and Welfare. Larry Pennell and Brant Haldeman is Solicitor General. But on the overall federal scene, how is the election wind blowing? Former Prime Minister John Diefenbaker was in Hamilton and in Brantford yesterday. He seemed optimistic about the Conservative chances as he whistled stop through Ontario. Said the PC chieftain,
I'm able to say now, 1 week before the election, that in my opinion, we're going to have a majority government that's going to be Conservative. In every province in Canada but one, we're going to increase our number of members. In 1963, when I was virtually alone on many occasions, in the division in the party, we won 95 seats. Today, we're united. And I've been in all the provinces, and without exception, subject to the one that I've mentioned, we're going to increase our membership. All we need is 38 members in order to have an overall majority. And I feel sure that we're going to have it.
Canadian bulldog of the progressive conservatives. Dave Crichton reported on Ted Spencer on the local scene. It's only fitting we turn it back to him now for the story on John Diefenbaker.
John Diefenbaker is remembered by many as the prime minister who inspired the competition to put his face on the dollar. Often lampooned, Mr. Diefenbaker is never known to have been actually insulted by the liberal Diefenbach. The stormy Westerner had his terms in office as the country's chief executive. His policies saturated the nation, whether it dealt with wheat, the Arrow, overseas affairs, or the Columbia River Project. His image was a colorful one, and it's doubtful the many cartoons and imitations hurt him any. As one looks back on what Rich Little did with his album, My Fellow Canadians, and such objects as the Diefenbach, it seems more probable they helped him. Diefenbaker has run this time as he's never run before. A game political figure whistle-stopping through the province. Yesterday, it was as close to us as Hamilton and Brantford. He still prefers a train for campaigning, the same type of vehicle he used to ride to power in his first victories so many years ago at Prince Albert. When divisions rent his party and the Liberals had deriding things to say about Conservative policy, Deke the Chief hung on and gamely let everyone know he's not down and out yet. He's still in their fighting.
One of John Diefenbaker's staunchest supporters has been his wife. Throughout it all, the time on Parliament Hill, the years of hard, close-in fighting, she's been there. Who is this woman? Jay Jackson?
Since she married John Diefenbaker in 1953, Olive Diefenbaker has been a part of his political battles, although she insists that she just goes along. At a political rally in an overheated hall or on a chilly railway station platform, she is usually only a few steps behind Mr. Diefenbaker, shaking hands with people he may have missed. Political observers consider her vote-winning charms formidable. How do you do? I'm Mrs. Diefenbaker, she says softly, with a warm smile. The smile and her homey sort of warmth, along with a memory for names and faces, help make Olive Diefenbaker an invaluable campaigner. On a whistle-stopping tour of Quebec in this campaign, newsmen saw her chatting in French to people at railway stops. I enjoy speaking French, she says, but I'm a bit self-conscious about it. Both Diefenbakers read French, and Mrs. Diefenbaker says she knows French grammar better than English grammar. Whatever happens in the campaign is slipping her husband notes. And one night in 1963, newsmen got a clue to the sort of information they contain. Mr. Diefenbaker, then Prime Minister, was speaking at Sydney, Nova Scotia, when his wife handed him a note. He stopped to read it, went on with his speech, then paused to look at it again. He explained to his listeners, my wife sent me a note, but I can't read it, so I guess I'll have to leave that out of my speech.
John Diefenbaker is 70 years old. If his party gets the majority this time, he may retire before his term is up. Mike Pearson is 68. For a look at Lester B. Pearson, here's Hal Scholes.
When Lester Bowles Pearson was a boy, church, home, school, and sports were the four pillars of proper family upbringing for any Methodist minister's son. Mr. Pearson recalls that weekly attendance at Sunday school was mandatory and that hymns which were sung practically every Sunday included Count Your Blessings, Throughout the Lifeline, and Rescue the Perishing. I wish in Canada we'd sing more often Count Your Blessings and not worry so much about singing Rescue the Perishing. He said this in a Thanksgiving Day broadcast during the election campaign. The liberal leader put it another way in his book, Democracy and World Politics, written in 1955 while he was External Affairs Minister. And he wrote, the true realist is the man who sees things both as they are and as they can be. In every situation, there is the possibility of improvement. In every life, the hidden capacity for something better. True realism involves a dual vision, both sight and insight. Mr. Pearson gave up a career in the Canadian Diplomatic Service to enter politics in 1948. He became leader of the Liberal Party in 1958 and Prime Minister in 1963. He is a son of the manse, a historian with ability to turn a polished phrase, a man who enjoys fishing, reading, baseball, and conversation. He is also a politician with a sense of humor.
Mrs. Pearson has never let herself be left out of things either. She's campaigned as a gracious hostess, and a keen campaigner with her husband, Mike. For a look at her background, here's Bud Riley.
Frankness and a sharp wit distinguish Marion Pearson. In print, her sharp comments appear harsher than when spoken. The print doesn't carry the twinkling eyes and the wry, warm smile that usually accompanies the remark. As a result, many of her friends think that Marion Pearson is one of the most misunderstood women in Canada. Mrs. Pearson has been accused of being very private, of being mysterious, or dull and disinterested. Her sense of humor has been described as overly caustic, cutting, and razor sharp. However, a newsman seeking an interview found Marion Pearson a warm, mild-mannered grandmother whose laughter bubbles out at the slightest provocation. Any tartness in her wit is directed at herself, not at others. The newsman asked, do you enjoy the role of Prime Minister's wife? Yes, she replied, I do enjoy many aspects, but I do miss not having our own things around us. The furniture is all government-owned on Sussex Drive, and even the things in the cottage belong to the government. Our own things are in storage, and I do long to have them around us. She dislikes being recognized everywhere she goes. She relates, I'll go into a store, ask for something, and the girl will say, just a moment, Mrs. Pearson. I feel a lot more relaxed when I can shop incognito.
What about the little parties, the New Democrats, social creditors and creditees? There are some political experts who feel the day when NDP could be called a little party is past. At least in this area, the battle fought by Robert Wright has shown there's no lack of enthusiasm. Last year, Welland Riding had a communist candidate and won SoCred Possible. This year, neither party has chosen to run. The leader of the New Democrats is Tommy Douglas.
To NDP leader T.C. Douglas, every day is a triumph. He says, we move another day closer to the eventual victory of social justice in Canada. It's as inevitable as the rising of tomorrow's sun. His unshakable faith in that doctrine prompted him to resign as Premier of Saskatchewan 4 years ago this fall and to accept the national leadership of the NDP, freshly created out of the old CCF. It carried Mr. Douglas undaunted through two federal elections and some bitter disappointments into yet another federal campaign. Douglas is running harder in this election campaign than ever before, crisscrossing the country at a breakneck pace. Now, he celebrated his 61st birthday just a week ago by flying out of the Maritimes to a night rally at Port Arthur and westward again on a post-midnight flight to B.C. Despite all of the discomfort, Douglas's good humor remains as unshakable as his socialist convictions. It's the keystone to a platform charm that goes all the way back to his student days at Chicago University when he accepted the gold medal honors in debating, dramatics, and oratory. Born in Scotland, he came to Canada with his parents at the age of six and returned to Scotland during the First World War. Then he came back here to stay at the age of 14.
One critical issue in this campaign has been political action in Quebec. Not the last to realize the value of that dissenting province is Réal Couette. Couette has been fighting his own battles at home and doing very well for himself in popularity polls.
For a look at the background on Réal Couette, this spirited French leader, here's Jay Jackson.
Réal Couette loves a political fight. The current election campaign is his 10th in 21 years. And once again, controversy and conjecture swirl around him. Running for the first time as the undisputed leader of his own party, the Social Credit Rally, Mr. Couette predicts that he'll be the kingmaker of the 27th Parliament. His opponents say he's a political Cinderella whose hour of reckoning is about to strike. The 48-year-old firebrand orator has been stumping the Quebec countryside almost without a break since 1941. But he remains one of the big riddles of Canadian politics. After being defeated in 6 out of 7 federal and provincial elections, he surprised everyone in the 1962 federal contest by leading Le Credit Social to victory in 26 of the 75 Quebec ridings. Mr. Couette was propelled to the center of the political stage as deputy leader of the 30-man Social Credit Bloc holding the balance of power in the fractious 25th Parliament. He threatened the minority conservative government with defeat in the Commons unless it adopted many of his policies. Social Credit leader Robert Thompson, Mr. Couette, and their followers voted with the government through the fall of 1962. Then they joined the Liberals and the New Democrats February 5 of 1963 to bring down the Diefenbaker government and force a new election. Ever since that historic vote, Mr. Couette's political fortunes have declined. During the 1963 campaign, he was the target of concerted fire from all parties. He had several public disagreements with Mr. Thompson and was accused of being a demagogue with dangerous monetary theories.
Long now before we'll be taking you to Welland High Vocational School for tonight's public forum with the three local candidates in the forthcoming November 8th election. The forum is presented at WHMBS by Local 523 of the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers Union. We'll be looking forward to hearing some of your questions at the forum. It's hard to forecast just now who will win this election in terms of seats gained. Perhaps if the candidates would let a voter forget parties for a moment, it would be possible to predict individual victories. One of the places that seems almost possible is Quebec. On the prairies, it's hard to make out who's in the lead. John Houston has summed things up nicely on the Western situation in Winnipeg as he reports,
"The prairies will remain loyal to John Diefenbaker's brand of conservatism."